Good morning, everybody. Our topic today is creating light out of darkness, comparing Purim to Hanukkah. Okay, I have to apologize, I'll have to drink a lot, but I hope I'll be able to manage the hour. Anyhow, so Hanukkah and Purim have a lot in common. There are two Yomim Tovim, two holidays that were established by our sages. The rest of the holidays are an obligation from the Torah, right? But Hanukkah and Purim were established much later by our sages at the time of exile, both of them. The holiday of Purim was in Babel, Paras, right? After the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash. And the story of Hanukkah took place in Eretz Yisrael, but it was still exile because the Greeks ruled the land. And it is one of the four exiles that we went through. The end of the story in both cases are miracles, right? On Hanukkah we had a miracle, two miracles basically, from the war and the Pach HaShemen, and on Purim also. Everything turned upside down. Instead of the Jewish people being killed, they killed what was very unique, never happened before or after. Not only were they saved, but they were killing others, right? Those who wanted to kill them. And the two events of Purim and Hanukkah became a holiday. A holiday that was established by our sages. And even though all through our history, we had situations where we were saved miraculously. There is no generation that Hashem doesn't save us miraculously from different people who want to harm us, annihilate us, right? As we say in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, שבכל דור ודור עומדים עלינו לכלותינו. In every generation, there are those who want to destroy us, including today, and they say it openly, right? But Hashem saves us from them. Still, those two were established as holidays. So as we see, there is a lot in common to the two holidays of Hanukkah and Purim. But they are also very different from each other. There is a lot of commonality, but they are very different from each other. I will mention just a few differences that I want to discuss and explain today. Obviously, there are more, okay? Because each holiday that we have is multidimensional. And if you want to compare, we can compare on many, many levels. We'll do some of it today. So we know that on Purim, the way we celebrate Purim, the main thing that we do on Purim is reading the Megillah twice, once in the evening and once in the morning. And the Megillah tells us the story, tells us why we have a holiday. We don't have it on Hanukkah. On Hanukkah, we don't read the Megillah. We don't have a story written for us. We do mention it in Shmona Esre and in Birkat HaMazon, but definitely no obligation to tell the story. And obviously there is a reason behind it, right? Let's go further. Hanukkah is 8 days, while Purim is one day, okay, but also has a meaning. On Purim, we celebrate the fact that we were rescued. Right? Haman, Achashverosh wanted to destroy Anashim, Nashim, Vatav, Biyom Echad, right? Everybody, men, women, children, right? And Boch Hashem, we were saved. So this is what we celebrate. On Hanukkah, it happened too. We went to a war against the Greeks. Still, and there was a miracle, right? We won the war miraculously. We were the few against the many, the weak against the strong. Still, what we celebrate is the miracle that was really, on a superficial level, not even necessary. The miracle of the oil that burned for 8 days, even though it had the ability to burn only for one day. So as we see, they have a lot in common, but they are also very different from each other. And we want to understand the nature of Hanukkah via comparing it to Purim, because our topic today is not Purim. So we won't concentrate on Purim, we'll bring only the difference between Hanukkah and Purim to the extent that we want to explain today the nature of Hanukkah. To understand it, we have to understand the time, the era where the story of Purim took place, vis-a-vis the era that Hanukkah took place. So it's two separate eras. The story of Purim is considered still part of the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, the first temple, even though it was after the destruction and it was in Babel, right? But it was in between two Batei Mikdash. When they came back to Jerusalem, they rebuilt the Beit HaMikdash. And the nature of the time, as we'll see soon, while they were in Babel, was still the nature of the time of before the destruction. The story of Hanukkah is already Bayit Sheni. It's 200 years, approximately, before the destruction of the Second Temple. And these two eras are very, very different. We see it from the fact that on Purim we have a Megillah, and on Hanukkah we don't. Why? How? The Megillah became part of the Tanakh. It's a sefer in the Tanakh, meaning it's part of the Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah. What makes the written Torah, is the fact that it's prophecy. The written Torah was given in prophecy. So Megillat Esther was written by prophets. Mordechai was a prophet. Esther is considered one of the prophets, right? So it has the nature of the time of the first Beit HaMikdash when we still had prophecy. Prophecy stopped at the beginning of the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. 40 years into the era of the second Beit HaMikdash, prophecy stopped. The last prophet was Malachi. It is known to us that Malachi was Ezra. Ezra, who came back to Jerusalem with the people from Babel to rebuild the second Beit HaMikdash, was still a prophet, and he was the last prophet. And it's written in Shulchan Aruch, very interesting, that on the ninth day of Tevet, there is a fast day. And Shulchan Aruch says that we don't know why. We don't know why on this day was established, why was this day established as a day of fasting. But later on it's brought, the Mishnah Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim brings, that in what we say on Asara v'Tevet, the piyutim, the additions that we say to the davening, it's mentioned that Ezra died on this day. And he makes the connection between the two. Because Ezra died on this day, on the ninth of Tevet, that's why we fast. And obviously we want to ask why. True, Ezra was a prophet, but there were many prophets before. What made the fact that Ezra was a prophet a reason to establish a day of fasting? It's because with the death of Ezra, prophecy was gone. No more prophets. Why was prophecy gone? We are told that the people of the Great Assembly asked Hashem to take away the inclination to serve Avodah Zorah, to worship Avodah Zorah. And with it, says the Gra, the Gaon of Vilna, there was a necessity to take away Nevuah. What I want to explain. At each time, each moment in this world, we have to have the possibility of free choice. What gives us the possibility of free choice? The fact that we have positivity and negativity in a balanced way. That the powers of purity, of kedusha, of holiness, and the powers of impurity are equal in terms of strength. So this makes it possible to choose. If one of them will be stronger, we will have to follow it, right? We won't have a choice. It will overcome the other one. So it has always to be balanced so we can have free choice. The time of the first Beit HaMikdash, and even before, since the point that we started to have Nevuah, what was more or less a period of 1,000 years, till the time of Ezra HaSofer, till the Jewish people came back to Jerusalem to build the second Beit HaMikdash was the time of prophecy. And prophecy is a gift, a heavenly gift, that makes it impossible to think or to deny the fact that there is a creator to this world. It's so obvious, it's so strong, when you have prophecy, the fact that Hashem communicates with men, when you see a prophet, when you see what he has to be before he gets prophecy, when you see how the prophecy affects him, his physical essence, right? It's a very overwhelming experience that transforms the person. And there were many Nevi'im in Klal Yisrael, double than the number of those who came out of Mitzrayim, over 1 million in 1,000 years. It's approximately 30,000 Nevi'im each time, along the 1,000 years that we had Nevuah. So everybody knew Nevi'im. And being that this was the case, it was obvious that there is a creator. It was obvious that the reality is not just the physical reality, that there is a spiritual reality that is greater than the physical reality, right? And via it, we connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So kfira, apikorsis, a denial of Hashem, was not even a test at those times. In order to enable free choice, though, at the same time, there was a very, very strong Yetzer Hore, very strong inclination to serve Avoy de Zore, to worship Avoy de Zore. And it was as strong as Nevuah in terms of its power to enable free choice. Now, what was the inclination of Avoy de Zore? We know that there were Nevi'ei Emes, true prophets, and there were Nevi'ei Sheker, people who came and said wrong prophecy. The people that came and said false prophecies were not foolish people who had hallucinations. Then it's a medical problem, not a Jewish problem, not a relationship with Hashem problem, right? They were very great people who were able to get a very strong spiritual experience, but it was not coming from Kedusha, it came from spiritual impure powers. They perceived the spiritual reality in a wrong way. And it wasn't easy to differentiate between the two. Being that they had such clarity via Nevuah, there was a need to create something parallel to it in the possibility to fail on the other side. And this was the Yetzer of Avodah Zarah. And it was so strong that 1,000 years down the line, we have a story in the Talmud about Rav Ashi, who said to his students, tomorrow we are going to learn about Menashe, our friend. Something that Menashe, you know, story about Menashe, the king who was very, very wicked. And the king Menashe came to him by dream, and he said, how do you call me your friend? Right? Meaning, I am so much above you. And he said, but you worship Avoy de Zore. He said, if you would have been in my generation, you would have lift up your coat so it won't disturb you in running to worship Avoy de Zore. It was very, very strong. And it came to a point at the time of the people of Knesset HaGdola, Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the people of Great Assembly, at the beginning of the era of the Second Temple, the Second Beis HaMikdash, that the Chachomim davened to Hashem to take away this Yetzer Hora. It was too much to handle. As we know, the generations deteriorate with time, right? And at that point, the Chachomim felt that it cannot be handled by the people anymore. So Hashem listened to them. They had a point, it was true. But parallel to it, Nevuah had to be taken away. Because otherwise it would have been no Bechira. Now, if we want to sum up, what was the nature of this time? What we would say is the following, that in this time, everybody, and that's the explanation of Rav Chaim of Volozhin in his Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, in this time, every human being knew that he has to nullify himself in front of a higher power. Obviously, the best and the requested is to nullify oneself to Hashem, to accept the authority of Hashem in our life, to follow him in everything that we do, think, say. But if not, they nullify themselves to impure powers. But it was clear that there is something above that is what it is all about, right? So they were avoid the Zohar. There were people who worshipped avoid the Zohar. There were people, obviously, who connected to Hashem. But everybody was mevatl himself, nullified himself towards something higher, bigger, greater that is worthwhile in his eyes. This is considered the time of the Torah Shebichtav. Torah Shebichtav, what's the difference between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebe'al Peh? Torah Shebichtav is coming directly from Hashem. Hashem said the word Moshe wrote. Hashem said the word Moshe wrote. Torah Shebe'al Peh is different. We figure it out. And with the death of Ezra, a different era started. Now it was not Nevuah vis-a-vis Yetzer Hora to avoid the Zohar. At the same time that Ezra was nifter and Nevuah was over, the kingdom of Yavan rose to power and started to conquer the world and eventually to come to Eretz Yisrael as well. And what did they stand for? They stood for Chochmat Yavan, the wisdom of the Greeks. This was on one hand, substituting the Yetzer Hara of Avoid the Zohar. From now on, no Yetzer Hora for Avoid the Zohar. Instead, we have Chochmas Yavon. On the other hand, instead of Nevuah, we have Torah Shebe'al Peh. Chochmas HaTorah. So it's a different era, starting at that point, where on one hand we have Chochmas HaTorah, and on the other hand we have Chochmas Yavon. So we have to understand what it is all about. Right, what Chochmas Yavan is, what is Chochmas HaTorah, and obviously we have to understand the conflict between the two and what does it mean to overcome Chochmas Yavan. What is it all about? So we'll start with Yavan and then we'll go to how Chochmas HaTorah overcomes Chochmas Yavan. What happened on Chanukah, basically, right? Because then we won over the war with Yavon. So Chochmas Yavon is a very deep wisdom, very fascinating wisdom. To the extent that Chochmas Yavon is many times quoted by Chazal. The Rambam says that Aristoteles, right, achieved the maximum that the human mind can achieve. Unless he gets Nevuah, unless we move to the beyond, right? Giving the word of Hashem that discovers more. But the maximum was this. They basically looked at creation and discovered the mechanisms, the laws of nature of this world, and that's fascinating. In all areas, science, the physical body, aesthetics, philosophy, they really discovered the wisdom, the godly wisdom that is hidden in this world. And it was fascinating and very, very appealing. And that's why wherever they came, wherever Alexander Macdon came and conquered, he was welcomed with open arms. And the Greek culture was adopted because it was very deep, very wonderful, very fascinating. It's like all that science has to offer in all areas, right? But there is a big but, obviously, that we will have to understand in order to know why is it in conflict with the Torah. We are also looking into creation to discover the greatness of creation, to see the wisdom. Right? The Rambam says, you want to love Hashem, look into creation, right? And see the sophistication, the wisdom, the complexity, obviously, is something that is very, very, very fascinating. It's to the extent that when we see one of Chachmei Yovon. We are supposed to say a special broche. Shechalak mechochmat, I'm sorry, shenatan mechochmato livnei adam. Baruch ata Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam, blessed are you Hashem, right? Shenatan that gave from his wisdom to people. He granted us the ability to research, to analyze, to come to conclusions, and more than this, to use what we found for the benefit of human beings. We conquer nature and use it, right? You have to discover the laws, you have to unravel the wisdom, and then you can use it. Before we unraveled the power of electricity, we couldn't use it, right? You uncover, you reveal the power of electricity that is in creation, and now it's used by every human being on a daily basis, endless times, right? It serves us. So it's fascinating, and it's great. And it was not just technical things. It was philosophy too, music too, right? Philosophy too. It was very, very appealing. But what happened was that they put men in the center. They were not ready to subjugate themselves to a higher power. Meaning they stopped at a certain point. They discovered and saw what the senses and the intellect can discover and see, and did not accept anything that they could have not feel with their senses, see, hear, feel, or, give me a second, please. Or anything that did not make sense. What means, in other words, that a big part of the Torah they did not accept. In fact, they wanted the wisdom of the Torah. And as we know, they translated the five Chumashim, right, to Greek, to Greek, right? But there are a lot of things in the Torah, in the written Torah, that they would explain very differently than what we explain. And the main part that they will explain differently are the miracles. What? Miracles. They cannot accept, based on their way of thinking, the concept of a miracle. Because a miracle says it's not just science. So what they did was, they explained the miracles. Of course, the explanation did not go with all the details. Of course, it did not make sense. But they rationalized. They rationalized in whatever way, like the people of the Mabul did it already. The people of the Dora HaFlaga, right? One of the questions that we ask about Dora HaFlaga is, it was so shortly after the Dora Mabul. Shem was still alive. How did they go ahead and did again something against Hashem? So they explained that once in 1,656 years, a flood is happening. Right? It's something that is natural. There is an order. It has nothing to do with anything above. Just you have to wait another 1,656 years, because as in nature, the same way that we can predict when the sun will rise tomorrow morning, even in 100 years, it's all calculated because it's science. So this is part of it. Just wait, and you'll see. And obviously, they didn't live for so long, so nobody could disprove them. Okay, so this was the philosophy of the Greeks as well. They saw the wisdom, they saw the sophistication, they saw the complexity, they were bewildered by it, and presented it as something so beautiful, so magnificent, and that's why it appealed so much. But It's all nature. It's all cause and effect. And you can predict in advance whatever will happen. Okay. Being that this was the case, what Hashem did, he created a nest. He gave us a nest. Because if you see a nest, you know the philosophy is not the right philosophy. They deny a nest, right? So if you take a certain amount of oil that can burn only for one night, and you can predict it's enough for a night, and it burns for 8 days, right? So you must say there is something beyond nature. And that's why Hashem made a nest. Hashem, in his mercy, gave us the ability to prove that this philosophy is wrong. It did not affect the Greeks. But as we know, in the exile of Yavan, we had a phenomenon that we didn't have before. And this is the Jewish people became mityavnim, adopted this way of thinking. And this was the main problem. The Greeks did not want to kill us. They were fine with our existence, as long as we did not stand against their way of thinking. So many Jewish people joined them, and they needed a proof. And it wasn't easy to see the truth at this time. It was the few against the many in Klal Yisrael too. Because it had such an appeal. It was so overwhelming what they discovered that one needed a big, or a strong base in Yiddishkeit in order to be able to overcome it. It was a very difficult war. Now, it goes further than this. And that's something very, very beautiful. We said it's on one hand the wisdom of Yavan, and on the other hand, it's the wisdom of the Torah. The wisdom of the Torah is not just a better way to understand reality. You have this wisdom and you have this wisdom. The wisdom of the Torah is something totally different. Because when one learns Torah the way he should, he becomes a different being. The Torah gives the people who learn it in the proper way powers above nature. And this is the proof. Because what happened on Hanukkah? Let's think for a moment about it. The Greeks defiled the Beis Hamikdash. There was no pure oil. According to Torah, from the Torah, when we don't have any other oil, right? And no way to light the menorah with any other oil, we can use oil that is impure. But they didn't want to do it. Who didn't want to do it? Who made the decision? Chazal. The leaders of this generation, the Torah scholars, the Talmidei Chachomim of this generation, the leaders, said no. And they withheld the lighting of the menorah for 8 days and went till Tkoa, that is in the north, a journey of 4 days each way to bring oil. And only when pure oil came in, they had oil to light. What did they have? They had a small little jar that they could light for one day. So they said, okay, what we have, we can do. We will light this one day, and we will wait for the rest, because we want purity. And the reason they wanted purity was because they understood what the battle is all over, is about, right? It was Chochmas Yavan or Chochmas HaTorah. Chochmas HaTorah is something different. It needs purity. It needs greatness of people. It's not just a wisdom. It's a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's Yirat Shamayim. It's fear of God. It's being a clean for godliness. So they didn't want to compromise. But they took this one small little jar that they had, and this they put, they lit a menorah for one day. And Hashem, in his mercy, showed that it's Chachmei Yisrael. It's the scholars of Klal Yisrael who can initiate a miracle, who have the power via Torah to overcome the wisdom of the Greeks. That this is the war, we can see also from what the Greeks did not let the Jewish people do. One of the things that they told the Jewish people they can't do was to establish the Jewish calendar based on witnesses. Why did it bother them? When is our Rosh Chodesh? If it's Monday or Tuesday. The people are going to see the renewal of the moon and come back and say, we saw it, and then Rosh Chodesh is established. Anyhow, they don't use our calendars. They have their own calendar. So why does it bother them? Because the whole concept of Kiddush HaChodesh indicates that Chachomim have via Torah the power over nature. Because if people come to the Beis Din on Monday, let's say, at 3 o'clock on a winter day, and they say we saw the moon, and the Chachomim start the interrogation, until they come to the conclusion that they are truthful, it's already Wednesday according to the Jewish calendar, because it's already after the night fell. So Rosh Chodesh will be the next day, Tuesday. But what do you mean? The renewal was on Monday. Hashem adjusted nature, held the moon from renewing itself, from moving further, based on what the Chachomim decided. So what did they see in it? This is a proof that Chochmas HaTorah, that the wisdom of Torah, is above nature. And this basically takes the basis, the foundation from all of their way of thinking. Okay, so they could not take it. What did they claim? We are told in the story of Chanukah, where it's written, right, by Chazal, they say that the Yevanim parzu et ha'echal. They came to the Beis HaMikdash. They came to the Kodesh, to the place where the menorah is, the Mizbeach, the Kodesh. Parzu et ha'echal. What does it mean? So the Maharal explains the following. He says, the word hateva is in Gematria 56. This is also the Gematria of the name of Hashem, of Aleph, Daled, Nun, Yud. This indicates that the Teva was created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? You look at the Teva, you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The word Heichal has the same Gematria also, 56. The Heichal is the Kodesh. In the Kodesh, there was one reality, the reality of nature. The Yavanim, Yavan, is 66. Is 50, is one more. Yavan is Yud and Nun is 60. I'm sorry, it was 65 and 66. Not 50, 65, 66. Yavan is 66, okay? They said, we are beyond Teva. We can conquer Teva. We reveal everything in nature, and in this way, we harness it in order to serve us. And yes, they can do a lot, positively and negatively, right? If you look today at what's happening, in terms of, let's say, the creation of weapons, right? One small little bomb can destroy so much. And another technology can stop it from going further, right? So, yes, there are powers that science has to conquer sicknesses, to change, to do many things here in creation, to create different machines and things that affect life, So they said we are above Teva, meaning the very fact that we know Teva gives us the power to conquer it. And when they came in, they defied all the shmanim that were there, all the oil that was prepared for the lighting of the menorah, meaning they try to say that they are more than what we stand for. They are able to defile what we prepare. But then Klal Yisrael found one jar that was sealed by the Kohen Gadol. They found it in Kodesh Kodashim, in the Holy of Holies, and with this, they turn on the menorah. There is a major difference between the Hechal and Kodesh HaKodashim. In the Hechal, more or less, you'll see soon why I say more or less and not fully, the laws of nature apply. In Kodesh HaKodashim, no laws of nature. We know that the Aron, lo min amida, the Aron did not take space. If you would measure the Kodesh Kodashim from one side to the other, it was 20 amot. But if now, let's say this is in the middle of the 20 amot, and you measure from here till here and from here till here, it has to be a little less than 20 amot because I didn't count this. This was not in Kodesh Kodashim. It was the same as if I would measure from end to end without skipping it. The Aron did not take space. Meaning the laws of nature did not apply there. What was in Kodesh HaKodashim? The Torah. Right, Aseret HaDivrot. Was in Kodesh HaKodashim. So Kodesh HaKodashim was the place where everybody saw that Torah is beyond nature. And it must be so. Because Hashem created the world via Torah, by looking at the Torah. Torah preceded the world. So of course, Torah affects everything and is not limited by nature. Hashemen is the same letters as Shmone. We know that the concept of seven is the world of nature because Hashem created this world in 7 days. Shmone is one above. Shmone shows that the reality is not just what we see, it's not just nature, there is something above, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's not only in terms of Nisim. Everything that happens is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in nature too. And Nes proves it to us. But everything is Hashem. There is no seven without the eight. Meaning if Hashem is not in the picture, there is no creation. Then it ceases from existing. Right? He energizes creation at any given moment. Now, this shemen was sealed with the seal of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol was also above nature. A person that the laws of nature did not apply to. We know that when the closest relatives of the Kohen Gadol our Nifter, leave this world, is not allowed to be part of the funeral, is not allowed to be impure because of it. He cannot stop in the middle of his service. What is angelic? Right? The closest, a parent, a wife, a child, right? Doesn't matter. This person is above. He lives in another sphere. What was the chotemet, the seal of the Kohen Gadol? The letter chet. Numerical value of 8. Okay? So, by taking this jar that symbolized the Kodesh Kodashim, the purity of Klal Yisrael, the Kohen Gadol, right? And putting it into the menorah, there is no wonder that it burned for 8 days. Because Torah is beyond nature. And when we live up to what we need to live up to, the laws of nature don't apply. See what happened in the desert. 40 years, there were no laws of nature altogether. Right? Everything was miraculous. So there is wisdom in among the Greeks, and very deep and beautiful and fascinating wisdom. But when we say a wise man of the Greeks, we say, Baruch shenatan mechochmato livnei adam. Hashem gives the ability to people to uncover, to unravel the secrets of the natural creation. What do we say when we see a great chochem in Klal Yisrael? A Jewish person who has chochmas haTorah. We have also a blessing for extraordinary people, of course. Right? What do we say? Baruch shechalak mechochmato leyereav. First, how are they called? Yereav. Those who fear him. Those who have a relationship with him. And what do they have? The chochmah of Hashem. He gives them a part of his wisdom. What is godly? And it's a totally different reality. Now we understand why on Hanukkah what we do is we light a menorah, we light a Hanukkiah, because that's the idea that stands behind the whole story of Yavan. The shemen, the menorah, stands for the wisdom of Torah, and it overcomes the darkness that Yavan created. The Torah defines Yavan as darkness. In the second pasuk in the Torah, Ve'aretz hayta tov vavohu v'choshech al pnei tehom. Earth was void, caused bewilderment, it was not organized, right? It was chaotic, and it was dark, and there were water there. So our sages say these four terminologies, Tov, Vavohu, Choshech, Alpnei, Teom, correspond to the four exiles. And the third of them is Yavan, the Greeks, and it's described as darkness. Because you don't see the reality in the proper way. It's not what the reality is. It's minimizing the reality to what a human being can see and to what a human being can understand. It's darkness. The opposite of it is the wisdom of Torah that opens up our eyes to see. We are told that when we look into the candles of Hanukkah, we light it and we sit and we look at it, what do we see? We are attached by it to the or to the light of the menorah that was in the Beit HaMikdash. It's still with us. And to what extent? To the extent that we are Yereav. What is absorbed inside us, regardless if we feel it or don't feel it, is based on who we are and how we prepared ourselves for it. I want to add another idea to it that will help us to define the difference and will answer some of the questions that we didn't answer yet on another level. We are told the following, that there was a major difference between the Beit HaMikdash HaRishon, the first Beit HaMikdash, and the second Beit HaMikdash. In the first Beit HaMikdash, there were five things that were missing in the second Beit HaMikdash. Among them, the Shechina. That's what we are told. That in the first Beit HaMikdash, the Shechina was there. The presence of Hashem was there. In the second Beit HaMikdash, no. That's one saying of our sages. On the other hand, there is a saying that seems to contradict it. Chazal says that the menorah was a proof that the Shechina is among the Jewish people. How does the menorah prove it? Because one of the candles that was towards the west side, Aner HaMa'aravi, got the same amount of oil every night, every morning, like the others. Every night like the others. But while seven candles were giving light through the night and then they were extinguished, right? No more oil and no more light. The Ner HaMa'aravi was burning till the next night, till the Kohen Gadol came to light again.
Which was the Ner HaMa'aravi?
Yeah, the Ner HaMa'aravi. in the menorah itself.
There were
seven candles. The middle was seven, but there was Ner on the, that was towards the Ma'arav.
Not part of those seven.
Yeah, one of those seven. The one that was closest to the Ma'arav, to the west side, and it was lit. Basically, it's a Hanukkah miracle. But all through the time of Beit HaMikdash, so how do we resolve the two? And Chazal say, this is the proof that the Shechina is with Klal Yisrael. So did we have Shechina in Klal Yisrael? Didn't we have Shechina in the Beit HaMikdash, or didn't we have Shechina in the Beit HaMikdash at the time of Beit HaMikdash HaShini? It seems like a contradiction. So in both verses, we had the presence of the Shechina, but with the difference. It was a different kind of Shechina. The Ner HaMa'aravi was burning miraculously not all through the time of the Beit HaMikdash HaShini. Our sages tell us in the 41st years, as long as Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol, it was burning 24 hours. Later on, sometimes it was and sometimes not. That's what they say. So was there the Shechina's presence? Yes. All the time? No. What did it depend on? Who is the Kohen Gadol? Where are Klal Yisrael at the moment, spiritually? What's the connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Shimon HaTzadik was Shimon HaTzadik. Not by, but obviously there is a reason why he's called Shimon HaTzadik. In his time, it was burning all the time. The Shechina was there. And later on, there were times where it was burning, but there were times that not as well. What's the difference between the two? To answer the question, let's go back to Purim vis-a-vis Hanukkah. We said on Purim, we have to read the Megillah, Hanukkah not. There was a major difference between how things happened, how the miracle happened in those two events. On Purim, why is it so important to read the Megillah? As we know, there were many links in the story. It developed slowly, slowly. At the time, people didn't even know that something is developing. At the end, we looked in retrospect and we saw that Hashem seeded, put seeds for the Yeshua, for the redemption, when, even before the decree was there. Esther HaMalkah was already in the Armon in the palace of Achashverosh before Haman became great and before he came to Achashverosh and asked to do whatever he wanted to do. Biktan Vateresh was plotting to kill Achashverosh and Mordechai told it to Esther and Esther to Achashverosh before it was necessary. It came off much later. Things happened. Hashem Higdim Refuah Lamaka. Prepare the ground for the miracle. And when it was necessary, it was revealed, and it came together. The tree to hang a man was prepared before he came to the Melech to ask to hang Mordechai. Right? Hashem planted. Harvona was there already, right? Planted by Hashem in order to say there is a tree at the backyard of Haman. Meaning, in other words, the Yeshua, the salvation, was initiated by Hashem. It's the same concept of Torah Shebichtav. Gifts are given. Initiated by Hashem. Torah Shebichtav was given. Nevuah was given. Gifts from Hashem that are beyond the capacity of a human being to get. Hashem is taking care of us. Obviously, in order to have free choice, we have to have also a very strong inclination to do evil. But the nature of the time is that a lot is given. There is a tremendous clarity, starting by Hashem, and he leads the story. What we call it Ra'uta di Le'ela, starting from above, an awakening from above, showing goodwill, so to speak, from above. At the time of Hashmonaim, it was very different. The Greeks afflicted us for 52 years. Nothing was planted by Hashem along this time in order to save Klal Yisrael. It was initiated by the Hashmonaim. After a certain point, when they felt something must be done, they went ahead, self-sacrificed themselves completely, because logically there was no way that they will overcome, right? And they went for a war. And then Hashem responded. And it signifies the concept of Torah Sheba'al Peh. What is Torah Sheba'al Peh? Torah Sheba'al Peh, it's us figuring out. The gifts are not given in an open way like this from above. We have to figure out. Why so? Because the generations deteriorate with time. And what was proper for previous generations is not proper for us anymore. We can't handle it. That's why Anshei Knesset HaGdolah said, let's get rid of the Yetzer of Avodah Zarah. We can't handle the test. The tests are different, but also the holiness is different. It's a different level, right? So if we want to compare the previous generations, the generations of Nevuah, to our generation, it's people of a different nature. They are so higher than us that we can't even perceive what was the reality. In objective terms, as we go further, the generations deteriorate. We are not where even our parents were. And we say it many times. It's a different generation. I cannot do what my mother did. No way I can do what my mother did. She had the spiritual capability that is my role model, but I can't see myself achieving it. I'm trying to follow to the extent that I can, but it's a different generation. And further we go, the harder it is. Right? And we are not asked to do what the previous generations did, because we start from a different place. So if we think it's darkness, in objective terms, our generation, vis-a-vis previous generations, it's very dark. But very interesting. When Esther HaMalkah went to Ahasuerus, she said, the chapter of Tehillim 22, Lamnatzeach al Ayelet HaShachar. Chazal bring this pasuk that speaks about a song, that speaks about dawn. Starting to get light. Chazal say the following. They say, Purim is the end of miracles. The end of miracles. So Chazal themselves ask, what about Hanukkah? It was after. Why do we say that Purim is the last miracle? There was Hanukkah after. And as we said before, in every generation we have miracles. So they answer, Purim is the last generation that could have been written. Meaning this is still in the era of Torah Shebichtav, where there was prophecy, where Hashem gave and gave and gave, and there was tremendous clarity. They were very great generations, right? Hanukkah is after. And this is hinted in the pasuk, Lamnatzeach al Ayelet HaShachar. Meaning, Esther said, I'm going into the king, and I'm looking for light. The time is very, very dark, right? And I'm looking for light. Now, it was before the miracle. Why does she speak about the light? She should say, it's getting darker and darker, and it's the beginning of a night. Help me, right? So it's very interesting. It's the last miracle of Torah Shebichtav, but what follows after is day. What indicates that in a way, there is something more positive in our generations, in the times of Torah Shebichtav, till today. Sheba'al Peh, Torah Sheba'al Peh, till today. And what is it? The ability to create light out of darkness. The darker it is, it's greater the fact that we can create light. Chazal say on Chanukah, the mitzvah of Chanukah, mitzvah chaviva meod. It's a very beloved mitzvah. Where do we light the Chanukiah? Outside, at the beginning of the night, not at the end, at the beginning of the night. We put it low. It indicates darkness, low generations. The wisdom of Yavan is celebrated today, maybe even more than by the Greeks. If we look outside, there are so many who don't want to recognize Hashem. And even if they say that they believe in a God, it doesn't affect their life at all. The motto is, if I want it, it's right. All across the board, in ways that were unimaginable just a short time ago. And it's moving so fast in this direction. The confusion is terrible. And, you know, to do whatever I want is quite appealing. If a person doesn't think deeper and doesn't experience better things, so to do what I want is, feels good in the beginning, right? And the war between Yavan and between Chochma Satora is still raging out there. And many times we hear, what will be? See the world. Especially now, even politically, what's going on, right? The decrees that are put upon us, anti-Semitism, whatever it is, in each generation, its own way, the appeals of technology, whatever it will be, right? The fight against the people in Eretz Israel, right? Whatever it will be, and in Eretz Israel itself, right? So it's very easy to say, we can't see a way out. What will be, right? So it's written that before Mashiach, the darkness will be the greatest. The same way that before sunrise, before dawn, it's the darkest. Because the whole purpose of creation is to bring light to the darkness. To create light out of darkness. If we compare physicality to spirituality, physicality is darkness because it blocks our vision, and spirituality is light. But the whole purpose is to create light out of darkness. So Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin says that the smallest thing, positive thing, that we do in our generations, and it was before World War II, right? And all that happened since then in terms of darkness, right? The smallest thing that we accomplish is greater than very great things that were accomplished in previous generations. Because the darkness is very thick and it's not easy. But we have to know that it's chaviv me'od. It's very beloved by Hashem. And not attribute smallness to ourselves. To know a very difficult job was attributed to us, was assigned to us, and we can do it. And we shouldn't minimize small steps in the right direction. Because every small step, when it's so dark, when it's so difficult, is extremely meaningful. And as Chazal say, me'at min ha'or, the small little candle that burns outside in the full night that covers the whole universe, pushes away a lot of the darkness. And if Hashem assigned us to it, we can do it. And if it's Hashem, we should be able to light the real menorah in Beit HaMikdash very, very soon. Okay, just before we finish, Afrei Chanukah to all of us.